episode 188. Here we go.
Really? We're up to 188. Well, let's rock, shall we?
Yes, let's rock.
You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 12th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Raoul Labradoodle's obstructionist puppy mill, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Bluegal.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday, everyone.
This is my last Friday in my 40s.
Yes.
I turned 50 on Tuesday.
Farewell, 40s.
Farewell, 40s. Yeah.
We're going to have the 50s are rocking. Trust me.
They are. Yeah. They're great. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. Absolutely. My kids will grow up in the next decade, and I'll have all this time to read, which apparently I'm going to need because many people have sent me books this week.
Yes.
I want to thank Mark from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Our friend Raymond, who always sends great books. Carol Y. and Andrew G. both sent books as well. So thank you for sending books and not Precious Moments figurines or something I don't want.
I already have all of them. I already have all of them.
And most moments. Of them were gifts.
They were. I bought all the ones with the sad-eyed children for myself.
There you go.
Because, man, they make excellent target practice.
The keen children with the big eyes. Yeah.
Because I just have middle child stomp on that.
The only reason I know about that is from Woody Allen's Sleeper, where, you know, they're looking at that painting with the big eyes. It's keen. It's more than keen. It's Cougat. We want to do a shout out to Matt Filipovich.
Yes. Hey, Matt.
We were on Matt's show on Thursday, and it was a family discussion. You do not need to pick sides. I know people on Twitter felt the need to pick sides in the argument that you and Matt were having. I definitely felt like I was the girlfriend in the dorm room.
Yeah.
Listen to you two boys hash it out.
We sat down as friends. We parted as friends.
Absolutely.
Love Matt. And,
we
and
love Matt.
That
we
didn't
do.
Stop in or get interrupted in the slightest. So
no.
It was
and
weird.
He had some really good feedback for you about your blog.
You did.
And had read your blog. And
he did.
So
you've done his homework.
It's worth listening to. His show is worth listening to. And Thursday, it was
absolutely.
It was the July 11th show. So if you want to hear more of Driftglass talking with another guy about you know what.
About stuff.
about the person we will not mention on the air this month on our podcast.
Well, and I think it was really, because it really is hard sometimes to have, because blogging is essentially a monologue.
Yeah.
And great big slabs of what I think or what I believe or what I think you should pay attention to go out there into the world. And then back an hour, a day or a week later come comments.
Mm-hmm.
And with Matt, it could be much more of a free flowing. Yeah, but this. Yeah, but that. Have you considered this? No, what I meant by that was this. And it's a lot clearer that we're not two people shouting at each other.
No, exactly.
We're actually having really, I thought was a really good conversation.
It was a good conversation.
And then the comments on Twitter were sometimes funny, which was, why are you two?
Mommy and daddy are not fighting. It's okay.
we're doing what we're allowed to do on this side of the aisle, which is have these kinds of conversations without being cast into the outer darkness. And we did, and we enjoyed it. So thanks again, Matt. Thanks for inviting us.
And finally, final shout out. We went to Drinking Liberally last night for the first time in months and months and months.
Mm-hmm.
And met all the nice people that are there. But we especially wanted to say hi to Brian. We had a you had a long talk with Brian about which Heinlein book was it?
It was. See, I'm having my brain's
Stranger in a Strange Land. Was it?
It was. Oh. It was.
Yeah.
And I should say, this is for the three conservatives who listen to this and take copious notes. I know you're listening, John Fund. I know you are. Skulking around Netroots Nation with your henchmen looking for where all the treason talk was taking place so you could report back in the Wall Street Journal. What do we talk about at the bar and afterwards? We talked about what liberals usually talk about.
Science.
Kids, church,
lawns.
Work, lawns, science fiction, and Doctor Who. Oh, and zombies.
And zombies, yes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Yep.
And other stuff.
And other stuff.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, and we talked about the farm bill. We talked about a couple other things, but
and we talked about, to be honest, we talked about conservative or reactionary or very opinionated friends and relatives and colleagues we have or have had.
Yeah.
Like very much and who are otherwise very insightful sometimes, but who have this massive blind spot.
Yeah.
But they can't see around the corner. And we're going to get to the gentleman from Gasland 2 as an example of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a very, you know, you could hardly spot the traitors in the room by what we were talking about. Of course, we were all doing, you know, finger code and blinking code. And transmit the
while we were talking about our respective 10-year-olds. Yeah.
And we were late because I had to get the facts from the White House and memorize all my talking points left, which takes a certain amount of time.
It takes a certain amount of time for that fax to come through from the Oval Office to tell
why
us
why they
what
don't
to say.
Upgrade to a 14.4 baud modem.
I don't know.
But, you know, what are you going to do?
Apparently
they're not so good at the technology at the White House.
So where do you want to start today? You want to start with Texas?
I think we should definitely start in the great state of Texas.
All right. They're crazy down there.
They're fucking crazy in Texas.
In the state house.
Yeah, they really are.
We're not talking about the rank and file of Texas people. And we have a lot of listeners in Texas, not just in Austin. We have listeners outside of Austin who we adore. So
this goes back to all the way before Tom DeLay. Who, as you might remember, his scandal, one of his many, many, many scandals, was like there's one thing you're not allowed to do in Texas politics, which is bring in outside money to help rig elections. Pretty much everything else is legal, but that's the one thing you can do. So that's the one thing Tom DeLay did.
Yep.
And you might recall way back in the in medieval times when Tom DeLay was getting funding from his friends outside the state to fund the to redrawing the districts in Texas, gerrymandering the Texas districts in a way that
was Dancing with the Stars, Pete.
Yeah.
We're just saying.
This is before he was indicted. This is before he had to resign in disgrace. This was when he was illegally, because it was like an off-census year, trying to get and succeeding in getting the Texas voting districts redrawn to ensure a permanent Republican majority, which he succeeded in doing. So however much scandal and however much shame he brought on himself and his creepy family and the name DeLay for generations yet to come, he succeeded. And Texas is now redrawn to the point where Republicans pretty much run everything and will continue to run everything at the state Senate and state House level. Mm-hmm. You could still have statewide elections where you might get a another Ann Richards, which would be a wonderful gift, a delightful miracle, maybe Wendy Davis, but you're still going to have the Texas Republicans running the state.
I had one person in the know on one of my email lists say that he would bet four figures that no Democrat at this moment can get elected to governor of Texas.
Yeah.
No matter how mad people are. There's just still that we're still waiting for the demographic shift to finish. So I'm not trying to pee in anybody's punch bowl, but we have to be sanguine about this. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and we have to be realistic.
Yeah.
About the fact that that's
I didn't mean sanguine. Sanguine, the opposite of sanguine.
Non-sanguine.
It's morning, people.
we have to be realistic about the fact that Texas, but Texas and North Carolina and like that are such perfect examples of what you get when you turn the keys over to the GOP. This current GOP as it exists today, not the GOP from 1862,
no.
Not the GOP as it may exist
50
years from now. Not, you know, this is what happens when today's Republican Party is put in charge of anything.
Well, and I just want to go back to what we said earlier this month, that this is a conspiracy to get the abortion issue before the Supreme Court. And
so they can finally get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Yep.
And clearly the only solution to this Republican Party, since both sides are equally awful. As you know, Blue Gal, both sides are equally terrible. Just look at the vote on the food stamp bill. It's obvious that both sides are equally to blame for the fact that food stamps.
No, they're not. Actually,
no, they were.
Actually, Democrats all voted against this farm bill.
Yes, but they should have done more.
And Obama's going to have his third veto of his 6 years in office.
Well, sure, he says that, but you know. No, clearly, Blue Gal, you don't understand. The only way to stop these the GOP from rolling over, from rolling us back to medieval times all across the country, is by getting rid of the Democratic Party and clearing the way for a robust third party.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want you to stop that now.
Okay.
I want to remind everybody that the sequester is still in existence.
Yeah, apparently.
We're moving along very, very quickly on our list of things to talk about. But we have a wonderful listener who supports us just about every week. And she wrote to me this week to say that her office has been hit again with sequestration. And she works in a federal public defender's office. I'm not going to say where.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fascinating to me that federal public defenders have to face the sequester as a flat budget cut, whereas the Department of Justice that prosecutes these cases can move money around, can adjust, can
prioritize,
give their attorneys iPhones and iPads and have no layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And her budget was cut in her office by more than 40%. And they lost insurance benefits, pension funds. They lost paid furloughs. They lost 13 employees and more possible.
Mm-hmm.
And she recommends Googling federal defender and sequestration, and you'll see what's happening nationwide. It makes you want to throw up. It's just awful. And this is the outfit that provides defense to poor people who are being charged with a federal crime.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be unconstitutional, and it's horrible. So,
well, and this is,
don't forget that this sequester needs to stop.
And this sequester, you can count as was true with unemployment, with massive cuts in teachers and administrators and managers and people I know, people I am friends with, lost their jobs. People, people have been shorted and have fallen out of the middle class. Mm-hmm. I've fallen out of the middle class because of related things to this. But there's a whole separate group of people who are indirectly funded by the federal government who are also getting slaughtered, but who don't show up on any statistics because they're not federal employees.
Yeah, all of the contractors and people who get money.
Yep.
Based on providing supplies to those people who get
funded. All the not-for-profits, all the agencies, the affiliates, all the organizations that provide social services and support to people, but who are not employed by federal, directly employed, are people who get grants or otherwise get funding from the federal government that has also been slashed. So in addition
And yet at the same time, we apparently have money to increase farm subsidies for members of Congress.
Yes, we do.
And this is completely unconstitutional because Congress people are not, according to my understanding of the Constitution, members of Congress are not allowed to vote on their own pay raises.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not allowed to vote on their own pay raises.
They vote on a pay raise, it goes into effect the following term so that the voters have a chance to say, you voted for your own pay raise and you don't deserve it, therefore you're out of office.
Exactly. That is part of the U.S. Constitution. That was I forget which amendment it is, but that is in the U.S. Constitution.
Yep.
What is not in the U.S. Constitution is any provision for a de facto pay raise resulting from the fact that you are what we used to call a gentleman farmer or a corporate farmer or whatever farmer. You are a farm welfare recipient and you vote in such a way that your personal wealth is increased because the government will buy your crap at a higher rate or give you more money directly.
Or guarantee you a profit or guarantee you no loss. You know,
and that is not a congressional pay raise because not every congressman is a welfare recipient from the federal government. Except that it feels that way. Yes. So I'm sure it's deeply immoral and grotesque.
And so then we have to talk about food stamp recipients being moochers.
Mm-hmm.
And can we get into this short form blog thing? Because it's directly related to that.
Short form blog
wrote an article yesterday where they pointed out this headline, British public, shout out to our British listeners, British public wrong about nearly everything. Survey shows.
Not an Onion headline.
Not an Onion headline. Mm-hmm. And short form blog says, this is an amusing headline, but it actually touches on a serious issue in democracies. How can policymakers sell and implement necessary policy? First of all, that's a joke. Mm-hmm. When the general public is almost comedically misinformed about what policy is needed.
Mm-hmm. But they know what plants need.
Brondo. The poll cited showed that Britons believe that 24% of jobless benefits are fraudulently claimed. Uh-huh. And the actual number is, would you like to guess?
Oh, it's a fraction of 1%.
It's 0.7%.
Yeah. Can I make a brief aside?
Yeah.
And this was back in the bad old days of Strom Thurmond and his thuggish friends. Mm-hmm. Back in the days when this was three jobs ago, I had conservative friends who told me point blank that about a third to maybe more of the federal budget was devoted to
foreign aid.
You know, and some ungodly huge amount of welfare was siphoned off by cheats and moochers. Mm-hmm. And these were simple declarative statements they would make as a matter of fact because they heard it on Rush fucking Limbaugh.
Yep.
This was going on 15, 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they have not corrected their thinking since because there's no one around who will – well, there are people around who will tell them they're wrong. Those people are primary and they disappear from the political scene.
Yeah.
But anyway, please continue because this is not a British phenomenon. We have
– No, and that's my point too. The large number of the general public in Britain believes that violent crime is rising, which it's not. It's falling. They believe that immigrants comprise one third of the population.
Yeah.
It's more like 13%. And that teen pregnancy is roughly 26 times higher than it actually is.
Well, yeah.
So one of the pollsters involved said politicians need to be better at talking about the real state of affairs in the country. Yeah, that'll work. Yeah,
that'll work.
That's where I got hung up on this, which was who says that policymakers want to implement necessary policy?
Well, yeah.
It's clear the Republican House does not have any notion of wanting to do that.
No. But Republican politicians in this country are doing exactly what they're supporters want, which is shut the government down. Yeah. The government is awful. It does nothing but terrible things. It is existentially malevolent. It is out to destroy us all. Therefore, shutting all government functions down, except for the ones that pay me personally, is the way to save this country for future generations. And it doesn't, and there's no force on earth that will uncrazy these people.
Yeah.
And so the idea that there is some sort of debate.
I don't know if it's the part of it that's not crazy is being paid to do it.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So and I really I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but this whole thing with Citizens United and the Koch brothers, I really believe that there is a conspiracy among governors to do what someone at the top of the food chain, money wise, is telling them to do.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to Chris Hayes last night, they got lied to by their own leadership in terms of making this some of these farm bill subsidies permanent.
Yeah.
And they were told, no, this is the same bill you passed before. No, it actually had stuff in it that didn't sunset some of these.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. So
forever and forever and for permanent.
All right. Gasland 2 made me so mad that I had trouble sleeping that night. And I don't usually have trouble sleeping, but I just and one of the reasons I'm so mad is so much of this story is happening in Western Pennsylvania, where I'm from. I mean, that's where I went to high school. That's where my sisters live. That's where my parents live. And both of my sisters have had treatment in the past 3 months for breast cancer. And I don't have breast cancer. And now I have to wonder, I did go see my doctor and he said, oh, you know, if your mother didn't have breast cancer, chances are you don't have this gene. So, you know, don't get the genetic testing for your sisters, but don't lose sleep over it. Okay, I'm going to lose sleep over environmental causes of breast cancer instead.
I'll find something to lose sleep
over. Is coming to Southern Illinois, so you know, I'm going to have bad dreams about that instead. And I am wondering if the reason that they have breast cancer and I don't is because I left Western Pennsylvania when I did. And that just infuriates me. My dad wrote me about the second sister who had surgery last week and told me that this hospital in Pittsburgh, which is a wonderful hospital, it's the McGee Women's Center in University of Pittsburgh, and they do mastectomies, and then they tend to kick the women out of the hospital very quickly to avoid infection, yeah, let's say. But my dad's really mad that they kicked my youngest sister out so quickly. He says they need the beds because they do 80 breast surgeries a day. 80 a day at this hospital. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Which means they're very good at it.
It does mean they're very good at it. It does mean, particularly in terms of emotional support, this hospital is amazing. Mm-hmm. And as I've said before, everyone from the florist in the hospital florist shop, you know, she's a survivor and talked to me about it and gave me hope on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's just kind of beyond the pale.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. I'm so glad, because from everything I've been told and talked to my sisters and their families about this, you know, they're both doing really well emotionally. And I'm sure it's because they have people around them at the hospital. They have the same surgeon, both of them. And they have people around them that are just positive, and that makes a huge difference in the healing process and in the whole making it bearable. So, mm-hmm. But our thoughts are with them. Please keep your thoughts with my sisters. The younger sister's in a lot of pain this week and has more pain to come, and that's hard to talk about. But please keep them in your thoughts. We do appreciate all the good thoughts and good vibes you've sent.
But it does make you wonder.
And Gasland. Yes, we want to talk a little bit more about this. We watched this and I was just, my fingernails were digging into my hands. Yeah. I was so angry at the governor of Pennsylvania, who's the worst governor in the history of the United States of America, in my personal opinion. He damages water supplies for money.
Yeah.
And
he poisons wells.
Poisons,
I believe,
wells for money.
That used to be a hanging offense.
Yeah.
He's a well poisoner. And that is that used to be just one of the worst crimes you could commit.
But two things jumped out at me from watching Gasland 2. And if you have HBO or if you can watch part of it online, I highly recommend that you do so. It will make you mad. But one of the people that they interviewed was a Pennsylvania legislator who is a Democrat and is against these fracking, ecology destroying wells.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, look, there's pretty much nothing we can do. If your kid's nose is bleeding because of all the methane in the air, move.
Yeah, that's all you have.
Too late. That's all you have. And so that made me really mad. But you want to talk about the guy in Texas?
Yeah.
And to his credit, he is an elected official, so he has a career to think about.
He is. And he is of this group of people with whom I believe almost everyone who's listening to us are familiar. These are our father's Republicans, mm-hmm. Or our mother's Republicans.
And his town has essentially been destroyed by fracking.
And there are,
he knows it. He's not pretending that hasn't happened.
And he is extremely angry. And I know people like this. I'm sure you all know people like this. People who are Republicans, who were born and raised, party officials, loyal to the core, fundraise, do all the things you do if you're really politically active and you've been politically active in your family for a long time. And he has had to watch as the party that he helped build destroy his town. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, no question about it, destroy his town. And so he says at one point, you know, I used to be a Republican, but now I'm an independent.
I'm an independent.
And Blue Gal just burst out laughing.
I just fell off my chair. I hit my knee so hard. That was just a real knee slapper there, because I knew what he was going to say.
Of course you did. Of course. What else could he say? Is he going to say, and I'm a devil worshipping communist?
Baby killing communist?
Because that's the only other alternative.
Yeah.
The alternative to Republican.
And he'd be destroying his career if he put a D after his name. Yeah, there's no doubt about it, because everybody in his town who can't drink the water anymore.
Right. With still.
But still, I'm not going to go so far as to become one of them.
One of those communist baby-eating monsters. And that's how far the brainwashing has gone, is you can't you can literally be poisoned by the people that you helped put in power. And they can do it right in your face. They can destroy your home. They can set your water on fire. They can give your children diseases. And you still can't find it in your heart to break with them, except to say, I'm going to go 50% over the line and call myself an independent. Well, fuck you. Everyone's an independent.
Yeah.
Everyone who, you know, as we were joking last night, 60 million fuckers voted for George Bush. Not a single Republican voted for him.
Yeah.
Astonishing. They're all fucking independents. They're all out. Oh, no, that's, you know, I'm not one of those people anymore. And the other
I'm
part,
in the Tea Party, and I'm an independent.
I'm
yes,
an independent.
Okay, all
right. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I want to read some scripture to you, Driftglass.
One quick part of
Gaslight.
Yeah, Gaslamp,
you're delaying scripture.
I know, and that's not scriptural.
Go ahead. Part of Gaslight.
Remember, one day is 1,000 days, and one penny is 1,000 pennies, or something like that. But the other part of Gaslight that was extremely telling was, this only became a scandal when it started happening to upper middle class people.
That was really important. That same guy who said move said, yeah, look, we have been destroying the environments of indigenous people since the dawn of time.
Right.
But now it's happening to white middle class people who built their, you know, $1 million home. They showed the guy with a $1 million home who had a sunken tub. Well, we can't afford to fill it no more because we can't use the water from the pipes because it's got methane in it.
Because it catches
fire. And we'd have to ship water into our house to fill the bathtub.
And he holds up his hose.
He lit his hose and he said, and by the way, we can't live here anymore because if anybody were to create a spark, our house would explode.
Right. And he goes through the house.
Built this McMansion.
Yeah.
It was obscene how much wealth this guy had to make this ugly house. But as the guy who said, I'm an independent, the reason he became an independent, he said, there's no, you know, conservatism is private property.
Right.
And there is no more private property.
No, because
gas companies can just slice right under your house.
They slant drill right under your house and right into your well water.
Yeah.
And pollute it. And out comes this free methane. Methane in its unburnt state. I'm not sure about the burnt state because, so pardon me there, but is some many dozens or hundreds of times worse than carbon dioxide.
Yep.
And therefore, as a greenhouse gas, as a creator of climate change, methane is so much worse in smaller doses. So it doesn't matter that it's cleaner burning. What matters is when it leaks out, it creates a much greater hazard to the global environment than does burning gasoline. And so you have all these multiple problems. Now, there might be a way to get this stuff out cleanly. I don't know. There might be places where you can get it out cleanly. I don't know. But clearly, that's not the case here. Clearly, this is a case of private corporations, private for-profit capitalist enterprises destroying people's towns and lives and homes with a perfectly free hand. And the only reason anybody is rising up and caring about it at this point is that the homes they're destroying were the upper middle class white people. And now it's an outrage. And now we should all get excited. And we should. But this plays into, I think, Chris Hayes's last chapter of his Twilight of the Elites book and a bunch of other fiction and nonfiction things I've read on it, which is you can forget about the people rising up and demanding anything. If your entire political plan it hinges on, and human nature will change, and suddenly people will spontaneously rise up and demand that the government do the right thing in large numbers. First of all, go out and rent Meet John Doe.
Watch
what happens there. It change really does happen for the most part when the people in the second tier of the economy overthrow the people in the first tier of the economy because they've been personally inconvenienced by shit that they've both been doing to the third and fourth tier of the economy all along. And to the extent that they can be the nobles in the Mask of the Red Death and wall themselves off from the crisis outside, nothing will ever change. To the extent that the Red Death gets inside the palace, that's when it becomes a crisis.
And I want the final thing I want to say about Gaslamp too is before we read scripture, is the counterterrorism and using the Army's manual on PSYOPs to deal with an angry public.
Yes.
And that there's this training that these gas companies and their minions are going through to silence dissent by calling them eco-terrorists.
Right. And they advise that if you confront these angry mobs, the first thing you want to do is download the Army PSYOP
manual,
counterintelligence manual in a PDF form, and read it, because it'll teach you how to undermine and discredit them
as eco-terrorists, you know, and crazy people who are against jobs and against progress. And so,
by the way, it's illegal to use for the government to use PSYOP methods against
on U.S. citizens,
by law. Now, I'm not saying don't do it, but when your first advice to
it's
this
against the law to use drones too, Driftglass.
Yes, it is
against American citizens.
It is.
All right.
But
I want to make sure that I get to this part about the Tennessee guy.
Please.
That I read to you yesterday because I got some more information about this.
Okay, but jump into the middle of Psalm 53.
No, not yet.
No.
Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation Deputy Director warned a group of Maury County, Tennessee residents that unfounded complaints about water quality could be considered an act of terrorism.
Yeah.
We take water quality very seriously. Very, very seriously, said Sherwin Smith, according to audio recorded by attendees. But you need to make sure that when you make water quality complaints, you have a basis. Because federally, if there's no water quality issues, that can be considered under Homeland Security an act of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you can't drink the water in your house or you can light your hose isn't a basis. You know, you have to. So they asked him, they said, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? And he repeated it almost verbatim as if he had learned to say this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the additional part that I found that you will just love.
Uh-huh. Does it involve Sharknado?
No, it does not involve Sharknado. We'll get to Sharknado later because we promised Shock on Twitter that we would get to Sharknado.
We promised no such thing, but I really want to talk about Sharknado.
Okay. All right.
Anxious.
This representative, Sheila Butt, who organized the meeting and was very concerned about water supply, was shocked that he said this.
Uh-huh.
I think we need to be very careful about how we use the words terrorist. But then, this woman who organized the meeting and is in favor of finding out on behalf of her constituents whether the water is safe or not. Okay. Here is her closing comment in this article. Butt said the water issue had been marred by communication breakdowns by both sides.
All right. Okay, now you've got me mad.
It's not going to be easier with such inflammatory comments being made. Uh-huh. Let's not be inflammatory. Wait, you know what's inflammatory? My garden hose is
fucking
inflammatory.
Yes. This should be water cooler conversation, except the water cooler exploded last night. Yeah. Well, but okay. All right. Since you've ignited me, Blue Gal.
Yes. We are delaying our scripture reading even.
That's
further,
okay. We're teasing people. Mad. The first thing is, I would strongly urge anyone out there who wants to see it, go rent An Enemy of the People, the Henrik Ibsen play from 1882.
This is as old as the Psalms, people.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it is.
And you can go get the Steve McQueen version. And he did a very fine, he got himself all bearded up and stuff. And it has a lot of actors you'll recognize. But it was, it is the story of the town's water supply, the spring, the well of the entire town that the entire town depends on for its livelihood. The healthy springs are poison. And the guy who does the testing and points this out to the town is crucified. And it's Jaws.
The water can't be poisoned because we depend on this water to bring tourists.
Exactly. Therefore, it can't. Go get more proof. That's not proof. I have someone over here who says you're a liar.
Yeah.
It's Jaws. It's the mayor of Jaws saying, of Amity, saying, you don't understand. If we shut these beaches down, we'll lose all this tourist money.
Yeah.
It's
the people in South Carolina and North Carolina saying you will not put in any insurance documents the fact that the beaches are eroding due to global warming because then we can't sell that land for beach housing.
And it is one thing to have a principal disagreement over a disputed fact.
Yeah.
It's a wholly different thing to create a class of people who are criminals for mentioning facts, for to demonize them and drive them out for mentioning facts. I think that we sometimes confuse the two. Secondly, since we're going to go down to both sides, do it row just for a second.
With the person that was on our side doing that.
Because you have to say that. You require centrism is like
she's
touching.
In Tennessee. She has to say it.
Well, yeah. It's like touching home base and tag. Yeah. You're required to make a token nod to the both sides are equally wrong. I will just, this is not scripture. It's the whatever the opposite of scripture is. it is the sublime to the ridiculous. Andrew Sullivan, of all people, mm-hmm. you know, who's finally, I will recommend, slightly recommend David Brooks's column today, where he just unloads on the Republican Party for their immigration bill. Mm-hmm. And
he's really mad about this.
I swear he wouldn't have done that if Raoul Labradoodle.
Yeah, no, that's not his real name.
No, it's not his real name. It's Raoul Labrador. Hadn't elbowed him in the throat on Meet the Press.
Yeah.
If he hadn't humiliated him on Meet the Press, David Brooks would not be this cranky. And he doesn't even stop. He makes one token gesture to the left, to the both sides thing. But it's mostly the guy who helped build the monster now getting really pissed off that the monster has turned on him.
Yeah.
So, sorry, crocodile tears for me. But Andrew Sullivan, who, you know, finally crept out of his decades-long coma to notice the fact that people that he'd been supporting hate him and are opposed to everything he believes in, now writes these long, if you squinted really hard, you would say liberal jeremiads against the right. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this thing. I'm going to quote one thing to make my point and then one thing to point out why it's comical. In America, violence mercifully is held at bay in these struggles, but the political system has effectively ground to a halt under their weight. Despite getting fewer votes than Democrats for president, House and Senate, the Republicans are using their gerrymandered majority in the House to block even executive branch appointees from approval. They are determined to destroy universal health care. They are launching a national campaign to shut down abortion clinics. They denied climate science. They voted against tax cuts purely because a Democratic president proposed them. But then, so he gets these symptoms right, but then because he's Andrew Sullivan and he doesn't want to lose his job, he has to lie about the problem. Mm-hmm. My fear is that these two forces, mind you, not one, two forces, are intensifying the strength of the other. Egyptians now have their own set of facts about yesterday's massacre, but we in America have Fox News and MSNBC. And the more the fundamentalist forces recoil from a multiracial, multicultural, sexually free society, the more secularists, that's you and me, Blue Gal, are tempted to move from condescension, which we are all smug and assholes, that's our major fault, according to Andrew Sullivan, to outright hostility. Before long, we have atheism in its most unadulterated form, banishing people of faith from any role in the public discourse, and vice versa. Because both sides, Blue Gal, because both sides. Because you can't say it. You're not allowed to have any opinion in our public square other than Republicans are awesome and liberals are traitors, or both sides are probably equally wrong. Anyone who suggests that both those opinions are bullshit is doomed to blog their entire life and not get in a larger audience than that. Although it's a pretty big audience, but you're never going to get into the national headlines. You're never going to get into the national conversation if you are of the mind, if you write like Mr. Mann and Ornstein wrote, no, it's the Republicans. They're the problem. Once you eliminate them, once you eliminate the Republican Party, once you get rid of that obstruction, the problem goes away. But right now, at this point in history, the problem we are facing is one party has lost its fucking mind. And you're not allowed to say that. And if you do, you can kiss your career in the media goodbye. Mm-hmm. Anyway, on to scripture.
On to scripture. This is just to point out how old these problems are. And to get back to the short form blog thing about, you know, the stupid public, but also the elected officials who don't really care if they're governing or not.
And this is updated with modern language, but it's
Well, and I do want to credit, if you haven't read it, go get it, go to the library and get it. Also, you can just look it up online. The whole thing's online. The Message, it's called, and it is the Bible in modern language. And so when they say prostitute in the Bible, this translation says prostitute. There's so many prostitutes in the Bible. It's amazing.
Isn't it
the number of prostitutes in the Bible.
And yet the number of Johns in the Bible? Zero. Yeah.
Well, very few, yes. And it's funny that It's funny you should say that, because I had a source who really knows her Bible say to me, talking about the Bible, you know, oh, people say there's nothing about premarital sex in the Bible, but there is. It's called fornication, and it's all over the Bible, and it's always blaming the women.
Of course. The woman tempted me,
Right. So I blame the patriarchy, as that great blog is called. All right. Psalm 53 from the Message. God sticks his head out of heaven. He looks around. He's looking for someone not stupid. One man, even. God expectant. Just one God-ready woman. He comes up empty. A string of zeros. Useless, unshepherded sheep taking turns pretending to be shepherd. The 90 and 9 follow the 1. Don't they know anything, all these imposters? Don't they know they can't get away with this? Treating people like a fast food meal over which they're too busy to pray.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
See, good writing.
And we're not going to have time to talk about theocracy today, but...
No, but suffice it to say...
Part of what's going on.
It's there. They're here and not going anywhere. Until they're shoved out, they're not going anywhere.
Which one do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about... I love your talk about Liberal Avengers Assemble.
But yeah.
Talk about Sharknado.
Liberal Avengers Assemble is just a reminder, especially since in light of Matt, our conversation with Matt.
Yeah.
That it's hard being a liberal.
Yeah.
Nobody promised it would be easy. Nobody promised it would be fun. Nobody promised you wouldn't have family fights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just strikes me how much we have on our team a spectrum of people ranging from rich smartasses to pure idealists to people who think they're gods to people with really big anger management problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's Tony Stark, the Hulk.
Thor.
Yeah.
And Captain America.
Yeah.
Who are vastly different, vastly view the world in a very different way.
Yep.
But
how to solve problems in a very different way.
Very different way. And who are you know, range from ideological to just horribly cynical.
Yep. And but egotistical.
Usually when confronted with a larger threat than their own and you know, there's this black guy in the middle who's trying to get them all to work together. But good luck with that.
Yeah.
But
except he's Samuel L. Jackson.
Exactly. That's
so you
got
to give him credit.
He's Samuel L. Jackson.
He's
and you Samuel can't say L. no to
fucking Samuel. Jackson.
You can't
that's
say no to that.
He is. Yes.
But you have a very, and I'm not going to push the analogy too far, but the point being that these are not people who normally get along with each other at all, except when the external threat that they all face is sufficiently large that they get over the fact that they disagree on some really important things, but compared to the threat that they all face together, their individual infighting can be put on hold for a while, at least until the end of the movie.
And then they can eat shawarma.
They can eat shawarma, go on their own way, and talk smack about each other all they want. But it is as important and useful and legitimate as issues over which we disagree are.
Mm-hmm.
It is really important that we not in the business of fighting among each other over things we passionately believe in, forget that there's a whole army of people out there who want to bury us all under concrete and forget we ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
And everything we believe in, everything we agree on, is to them antithetical to the way they want to run the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it might every now and then be helpful to look across the aisle at the whatever person, not across the aisle, but look to your fellow liberal leftist, commie, America-hating, cheese-eating surrender monkey and not see someone who is absolutely irredeemably Kool-Aid drinking cultist, but is actually more or less on your side most of the time, and that a family argument is legitimate, but once the sirens sound, it's time to put the turkey legs down and get with the program.
Yep. And have another piece of pie, for God's sake.
For God's sakes, who doesn't like pie? And
so,
finally, Sharknado.
So my next movie for sci-fi is Shark Fracosaurus.
Yes.
because we've got to get more people understanding what happened in Gasland 2 than we do watching Sharknado.
I think
apparently was like the biggest ratings thing on a Thursday night in the summer ever.
Science fiction, sci-fi channel history ever. I think If you take Sharknado and combine it with fracking, you have Pacific Rim. I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I'm not going to go see that movie.
So. I'm going to see it. Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Giant robots beating up monsters from the seventh dimension from a different universe. Oh, yeah. I'll be there. Count on it.
But I love how when you go to the movies with Junior Dude, who's 14, and they just have you guys pegged. Because every single preview.
You think the NSA is good?
You and Junior look at each other and put thumbs up. Like, yeah, we're going to see that. Yeah, we're going to see that. Yeah, we're going to see that.
Or thumbs down. Or like, you know, I've seen it done that. Yeah. No, it's Men in Black meets Ghostbusters. I'm not going to waste my money on that.
No, not on that one.
No.
No. But if it has the word space in the description, chances are we're going.
Well, and just so we're clear about pegging people, I believe you and I went to go. The woman who said, I'm never going to watch that goddamn awful Walking Dead movie, Dead show, thoroughly enjoyed World War Z.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, the only thing I had to say about Sharknado or the two-headed shark, shark attack, which followed it or preceded it, depending, I think it was running a cycle, was obviously people don't realize that the big two-headed shark attack was loosely based on a Hemingway story. And Sharknado was loosely based on Mark Twain's The Airborne Shark of Calaveras County. So,
all right.
Yeah, it's all true.
I want to end our discussion today.
Well, I want to point out one more thing. Yeah. The script for Sharknado was written by Harlan Ellison, and it won the Writers Guild Award under its original title, which was A Phoenix Without Ashes.
Uh-huh.
But it was so butchered and messed up by the people who turned it into Sharknado that you will notice in the credits that it says Cord Wainer Bird way down low. And I believe he was going to sue them. But then he saw it and said, oh, no. I will let history take care of burying this turkey.
Actually, he did say that about In Time, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He did.
He said he was going to let history take care of it.
Yeah, he said, yeah. I was going to, you know, sort of maybe get more litigious on their ass.
I saw the movie.
And then I saw like, no, I think I'll just let it be swept down the memory hole.
He's already going to lose money, so fine.
Never mind. You go ahead. You go with that.
I don't want to take credit for that. No. All right, I want to read a letter because it was a letter, and this is serious now. We have to switch gears and be serious because this is a letter about abortion. Uh-huh. And and I've got to edit this because I want to preface this. If you think this is worth reading on the air, please omit my name. Feel free to give me a cool fake name. So Sharknado wrote this letter, and it's a wonderful letter. I really want to get to this. I frequently get confused about my feelings on abortion. I get confused because my mother is a child of rape. Having that be a part of your life story messes with your head a lot. It's very odd to look at your facial features in a mirror and say, is this the face of a rapist?
Mm-hmm.
I would think some people would say being that close to the issue would make it easier and clearer. It's the opposite. It makes it harder and murkier.
Mm-hmm.
If my grandmother had chosen to have an abortion, I wouldn't exist. I also know, and I'm sure at the time that his grandmother was raped, abortion was illegal in the United States. But I also know that some of the details of how hard it was for her and how embarrassed she must have been about the whole situation. I would have preferred her not to have to endure all of that on top of being raped. Ideally, my grandmother would not have been raped at all. But that has the same end result for me as if she had had an abortion. So, as you can see, proximity does not provide clarity. It makes it murkier. It's not simple, and it's not cut and dry. And I wish I could say that to everyone who is pro-life, quote unquote. Even to her grandson, who was born 20 years after she died, it's hard.
Yep.
Which brings me to how I come down on the issue. I personally feel too confused to side with either side based on my own feelings. Is it a war on women or not? I can't figure it out. Fortunately, I have a very good source on this, my wife. How do I handle it? I trust my wife.
Yeah, exactly.
I personally don't get how legislation like this is a war on women. I can't see it. Not that I refuse to, but there is personally for me a lot of emotion tied to the issue.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have those feelings. However, when I speak to my wife, she tells me it is a war on women. Uh-huh. She tells me that she feels like she's under attack. and that legislation that people want to pass make her feel less free in the land of the free. I personally can't comprehend that, but I can trust my wife, so I do. As I swore to do on my wedding day, I stand with her. For me, I trace this back to a point where Mitch McConnell said there was no war on women and it was an invented issue. And if you didn't believe him, ask the women in your life. I would like to tell Mitch that I did. And as a result, I will vote based on my faith in my spouse. I would very much like to hear the logic to counter the argument that Mitch McConnell gave me. Anyway, that's just my two cents. I don't want to pretend that I understand what that experience is like. But just like LGBT issues that aren't just about same-sex relationships, abortions aren't just about people who have them. I figured that if coming out on abortion was important, I'd start by writing you two a letter. Keep up the superb work. That is just a marvelous letter.
That is. Thank you
really
for sharing.
Nothing more to say. Yes, yeah. Thank you. I didn't really come up with a cool fake name for that person, but excellent letter writer that he is. We appreciate it very, very much.
This is a very delicate place for a person like me to walk because I'm a white man who's never had an abortion. And
well, and for the record, I've never had an abortion either. Yeah. And I've been through infertility treatment and I've been through needing health care for my lady parts that was not common.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you've when you had your uterus removed from your body cavity and operated on so that you can have babies. This gets really personal.
We know what you're.
It should be really personal.
Sure, that's the point.
That's the point.
and you, this is what makes podcasting with you fun. Well, there's lots of things that make podcasting with you fun, but part of it is both of us have spent some amount of time during our lives wading through great literature and great art and great writings of philosophy and psychology and theology and so forth. To the extent that we're both not experts on the subject, but we get the fact that being a human being is very fucked up and complicated. And if our reader, I usually don't recommend books to people. I recommend them on a parallel subject, but sometimes reading them is too painful. The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler is a wonderful book, but too painful for some people to read because it hits very close to home. Octavia Butler writes another novel called Kindred, and she takes on the – and Octavia Butler was – unfortunately, she's no longer with us – was one of the great science fiction writers of all time, but she's one of the few African-American woman science fiction writers of all time. And one of her subtexts is sort of this. It's if you are an African-American or if you're a white American, it is very likely that you owe at least some of your heritage to rape.
Yeah.
It is very likely that somewhere in your past, someone did something horrible that would cause them to be put in jail for life or executed by today's standards that were by the standards of 200 years ago, perfectly legitimate and acceptable to some people. And how do you unwind all of those terrible feelings? How can you not value your friend? How can you value your friend or your spouse or your loved one or whatever at the same time and not condemn the system of oppression and deprivation and rape that from which their ancestors came?
Even if you deny that any of your heritage was from
anything
the American
like
South.
Yes.
Go back again to your Bible and look at the story of Absalom, whose son raped his sister. And he had to decide which child to defend.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, well, my son raped his sister. What do I do now? Well,
exactly.
And I'm a patriarch. What do I do now?
And people who are looking for that binary correct answer I want to take the moral high ground here and say that I'm right and you are wrong.
Yeah.
The only way to do that, given the very strange ground on which we all tread, our culture comes from a culture of violence and murder and terrorism and rape. Our music comes from there. Our constitution comes from there. That's just that's history. And history is bloody and awful and written by the winners and rewritten by the people who conquered them. And there is no way to unwind it and find that perfect golden thread of moral certainty that goes all the way back to the beginning of whatever.
Although Absalom did ultimately side with his daughter, which is unusual about the whole story.
The point is not to pretend this history doesn't exist or wasn't tragic, even if it's personal one generation back or 10 generations back.
Right.
The secret is bury yourself in great literature and great art and understand that being a human being is a horribly complicated, wonderful, tragic, ultimately fascinating adventure.
Mm-hmm.
That is full of ambiguity and conflict and things not happening the way they're supposed to happen according to the rule book.
Yeah.
And secondly, trust the woman.
Yeah.
Trust her.
Thank you.
The end of the day, you can't find a rule book that is any better written than the letter that our reader just wrote, which was the best you can do is you either trust the moral agency of others or you don't. And you trust
them. And if you're a fundamentalist Christian, remember, God trusted an unmarried teenager with his son.
Yeah.
if that's I'm not coming from that angle.
Right.
But remember that.
And I am less sanguine about budging them even in their beliefs, because they really do want that. They want certainty. They want a book that tells them all the rules and how things should work, and they can be, and everything has a clear, bright line between right and wrong. And on some issues, there really is a clear, bright line between right and wrong. On the shape of the earth, it's round. On the length of the earth, it's billions of years old. On climate change, it's happening. There are clear, bright lines. But on lots of other issues, they're just
that bright line that a woman is either a Madonna or a whore.
Yeah.
She's one or the other. She's either a virgin or she's a slut.
The best we can do is trust the God in the other, as some religions recognize it. Trust the humanity in our fellow human beings and let them decide for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Give them the best possible education, the best possible access to facts, and then trust they're going to make
contraception.
Trust them to make the right decisions. And when they don't, do not condemn them as demons.
And when they're a victim of a crime, do not condemn them at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you so much again for that letter. And thank you, Driftglass, for your comments. I deeply appreciate that. I'm looking at my podcast correspondence folder.
Uh-huh.
It has 666 messages in it.
Ah!
Red, but just saying.
Yeah. Well, we can skip over Nancy Pelosi kicked John Boehner.
Well, you want read that because that's good.
John Boehner is just in a world of hurt right now. He has completely lost control of his caucus, and everyone, he's done it in public.
Yeah.
This is a job that he fought really hard for, bent arms to get, and cried over when he got it. And now every day of his professional life as the Speaker of the House, he is securing his position as the worst speaker in American history.
Yeah.
He is a disaster, a public disaster. He's a disaster in the internet age, which makes it 10 times worse than a disaster in the telegraph age. But Nancy Pelosi explained to John Boehner in little words so he could understand that the Constitution says a majority. It doesn't say the Hastert rule or sometimes the Hastert rule or when I feel like it's the Hastert rule. It says the majority. And there are ways to achieve the majority that I hope they will pursue. Dear John.
But that doesn't allow me to just play with my own team only.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and he's
you have to depend on Democrats to get anything done. And the point is, does the House want to get anything actually done?
No, they don't.
It doesn't immediately get negated by sane people in the other House, in the other chamber, or the White House.
Well,
they don't.
He and David Brooks need to go on a 3-day bender and never come back. just disappear. You both have enough cash stashed away. Just disappear and step out of the public light for a decade, because this is the monster you created.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the monster that gave you your respective careers. And now it has become exactly what liberals told you it would become. And I don't want to hear any more of your fucking crocodile tears about it.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's kitty is Pangerban. Pangerban loves the ceiling fan. And actually, there's an amazing picture of this cat on his hind legs going after the ceiling fan in a very dangerous way. I'm a little worried about this cat, but You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. As you can see, we love hearing from you. We read everything that comes in, all 666 messages. Feel free to write us, and thank you, everyone, for all your kind birthday wishes. It's next Tuesday, and I will probably spend the day liking Facebook comments all day long.
While your husband brings you breakfast in bed.
Oh, that'll be nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union's letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Go, Blue Gal. The internet kitties mean to win Wimbledon.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional F Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
And I've got a bunch of stuff from Raymond on Heinlein. But before we get to that,
all right,
I want to ask you a quick question from Jeffrey.
All right. Hello, Jeffrey.
Jeffrey asks, who wrote How Should Interest Rates on Goods in Transit Be Computed When the Goods Travel at Close to the Speed of Light? He also wrote, in response to that, a solution is derived from economic theory, and two useless but true theorems are derived.
It sounds like something Isaac Asimov would do.
Oh, okay.
But I have no idea.
The answer is Paul Krugman.
Well,
he wrote,
then I was... That was awfully close.
He wrote a paper in 1978 called The Theory of Interstellar Trade. I have a link to it. I'll put that up at the Facebook page. And if anyone wants it, they can email us. But
well, I'm not going to bore you with this, but there is a not quite a subgenre, but a subtext in some stories that is based on sublight travel between planets using solar sails and other propulsion systems. The objection to which is, hey, it will take years to get from planet to planet. The counter objection is, yeah, but it used to take years to get from continent to continent.
Yeah, right.
And there was a, you know, an oceanic trade, if you went around the horns and if you crossed Asia, that thrived.
Yep.
Even if it took a really long time to get from place to place. So you can make the argument that once it becomes economically viable, hopefully we're not talking about spices and slaves this time and gunpowder and treason, but we're talking about minerals and things, but you could plausibly talk about an economy that is solar system wide, or at least intersolar system wide, where you could have trade like that, especially when you have near instantaneous communication, since that's how money gets transacted now anyway. So,
well, and there's been quite a lot of growth in historiography of the Atlantic Ocean, where historians have realized that the Atlantic Ocean, once people really got to sailing, wasn't a barrier between the old world and the new world. It was a highway.
Yeah.
There was a lot of fluidity between the two sides of that ocean. And
no pun intended.
Yeah. Fluidity. Right. Okay. So our friend Raymond.
Hey, Raymond.
Yeah. We love Raymond. 12 references, all of which relate to Heinlein. You have to tell me.
A well-known fascist, Robert Heinlein.
Shush! Yeah. We are not going to troll your comment section on this podcast.
No. I don't care what you say, Blue Gal. We're not going to do that.
Don't cross the streams, Driftglass.
I promise not to do that. No.
All right. Spot the Heinleins, it's called. And there are 12 of them. Or 13. He has a 12A also. But we'll see what happens here.
Jesus.
Number one. Star Trek, the original series, For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky.
Yeah. See, that's not written by Heinlein.
No, there's something about
it's influenced by Heinlein. It's Robert Heinlein's universe story, the generation ship that gets where there's a mutiny and they forget that they're on a spaceship.
Now, see, I don't think we're going to stump Driftglass on these. Somehow I just don't think so. That is correct.
Although there are places where Mr. Heinlein repeats or riffs on the same theme a couple of different times. Mm-hmm. So I might get, you might not get your example right.
Yes. Okay. All right. All right. Mm-hmm. Number two, computer aided drafting.
I know Waldo and Magic Incorporated does some engineering, but the Door into Summer.
Correct.
It's full of, it's the guy who is an inventor, and his partner and his scheming wife, I believe, conspireth to kill him by pushing him into the future where he wakes up. And anyway, it's a good book. There's a part of that book where the headline is from, as I recall, the Greater LA Los Angeles Times, like 1996. And the guy gets a job in the auto industry crushing cars that have just come off the assembly line.
Wow.
And it makes no sense at all to him. And his boss explains to him that, do you want to screw up the economy?
Yeah.
This whole thing is basically a welfare program. And unless you want to make the Germans and Japanese unhappy, you'll just do your job, which is destroying the cars that you just created.
Wow.
So, sound familiar?
Yeah. Number three, the powered battle suit in Avatar.
Yeah, that's Starship Trooper.
Right. Yeah. Number four, lights that turn themselves off or on to save power.
Poop. I'm going to guess that's Universe as well.
No, it's The Man Who Sold the Moon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. I suppose
number
that's acceptable.
Number five, there is a self-motivated active vacuum cleaner called a Roomba.
Oh, that's probably the Door into Summer as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. He was an engineer after, so yeah.
Number six, stargates in any of the movies or series anywhere.
Oh, Tunnel in the Sky.
Correct.
Yeah.
Number seven.
Yay. Yeah.
Tribbles from Star Trek. Tribbles.
Those, I'm guessing, are Martian flat cats from the Rolling Stones.
That is correct.
That series of stories. The Stone Family on Mars.
Number eight. Computer-generated images of people.
Of people?
Computer-generated images of people.
Computer-generated images of objects showed up in Stranger in a Strange Land.
Oh.
Computer-generated images of a fake person showed up in Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
That's correct.
Yay.
Adam Selene.
Yes.
The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. But
that wasn't a person. Well, it was. The whole question was, is a sentient computer a person? And they needed a cover story for the fact that their revolution was being led by
a computer.
A sentient computer, which kind of, doesn't lend
to that's kind of cool. So they created Adam. The computer created Adam Selene?
The computer created his own visual
human
face.
Yeah.
Okay. Go with his voice. And then they, as I recall, after the, essentially, the taking the Bastille, after the revolution, they found some bodies that resembled his and destroyed one of them or burned one of them to the point where they could have a funeral.
Oh.
For the state. So for the leader that never was.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. All right. Number nine, the plot device of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 2.
Oh, I
can't even remember that movie.
That was death and playing chess.
Okay.
And there was a plot device in one of the later stories. Jesus, I can't remember what it is. I want to say The Number of the Beast, although that was a horrible book. By the way, that was just an awful book. I really didn't like it at all. Where people changed the future by showing up and putting food and stuff where there wasn't food before, so the crew wouldn't have to resort to cannibalism, so they wouldn't be blah, blah, as I recall.
But that's wrong.
Oh, okay.
It's By His Bootstraps.
Oh. Yeah.
By His Bootstraps.
Well, By His Bootstraps is the person is the same person over and over again in the story.
Okay.
So I will accept By His Bootstraps. I will also accept I'll Use Zombies if we're going to go down that road.
All right.
But
well, you take that up with Raymond, all right?
I will. But then again, I might just be misremembering the plot itself from Bill and Ted's.
He'll email you this afternoon. Yeah. You know he will.
I know he will.
All right. Number 10.
Uh-huh.
First Lady Nancy Reagan, hint, think astrology.
Yeah, that's A Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Number 11, at the end of Back to the Future 2 and the delayed Western Union telegram.
Oh.
There were letters through various legal firms.
Yeah, that has to be one of the Howard Foundation books.
Oh, I don't
know. The longevity books with Lazarus Long. So it was either one of the early Lazarus Long stories, or was it Time Enough for Love or something?
Time Enough for Love. That's right. That's the one he has down here.
Where a man has sex with his own mother.
Oh, my God.
Thus proving that Robert Heinlein was an incestuous monster.
All right.
Yes.
Number 12. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he was the first to write about it, but Remote Manipulators.
Yeah, that was Waldo and Magic Incorporated.
Yes, it was.
Yay.
Yes.
From where the term Waldo's come from.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Sorry, I'm cheering myself on because no one else will.
And 12A.
Yeah.
Heinlein invented in Stranger in a Strange Land a device. He described it so well that later a guy tried to patent the idea, couldn't. Do you know what the invention is?
Why, yes, I do. It was the waterbed.
Ooh, very good.
And it was, and actually the inventor, I think, gave him one of the original
waterbeds.
Yeah, as a gift, because it was... Yeah. He did describe it really well. It was a hospital bed. Mm-hmm. Little did he know it would go on to become a recreational device for kids when their parents were away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever slept on a waterbed, darling?
No.
I have. I do not like it at all.
No, I have never slept in a waterbed.
It's always been an awful experience. I have never liked it. So. First you, Robert.
And let's see. Raymond says, I don't think any of these really need hints, so there aren't any.
Okay.
Although, if he was the only one to be writing sci-fi for Boy's Life, there was a story that had human-controlled BRTs like Ripley used in one of the Aliens movies. Uh-huh. If Driftglass wants an example, pick one and try the rest. Or if that falls flat, maybe I'll try computer questions next time. No, Raymond, that did not fall flat. He did very, very well. And he needed something to get his score up, so that worked out.
I did.
Fine.
And I regret not having... chug down another gallon of coffee before.
Well, I know
this.
It's Friday morning and we're up. Let's put it that way.
We're ambulatory. And we had a lovely
morning,
night.
People.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. Let's get started on the podcast now. And
all right.
I'll cut and paste these around. But
all right.
Thanks everybody.
Unless you want to redo them, because I feel
no,
I've let
that...
the side down. I feel I've let the side down badly.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Go finish mowing your lawn now.
Or staining your deck.
Or staining your deck.
Yeah. Or whatever the kids are calling it these days.
All right.